When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
SecondCityHockey.com.
Dakota, Jonathan Toews.
Commit to us. Commit to the jersey. Commit to our people here.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton. You can find me on Twitter at @_DaveMelton and usually tweeting a bunch of nonsense from our main account that is at 2ND City Hockey. And I've got my usual line mates with me this evening. Up first, it is at Shepherd Price on Twitter, and he's the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepherd Price.
Hi, I have as many goals in the playoffs as the Vegas Golden Knights as a team through the first game of the season.
Well,
on 45 fewer shots. So talk about efficiency.
Yeah. You know, I feel like Cam Talbot is like not Patrick Waugh. So I think they should put some goals on him,
but he's kind of Anton Khudobin.
That's not that much of a compliment though.
Well, against Vegas it is. Cause if you look at what Khudobin did in that Dallas series last year,
he is their kryptonite, I guess is what you're telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we should just get this out in advance that as this podcast recording goes on, the Vegas Golden Knights game is starting. Shepherd's covers them for knightsonice.com, which is a great website. So if you hear any random spurts of joy or whatever, it's probably something that happened in the Vegas game.
I will try and mute myself when those random spurts joy happen. But
don't worry about it. No one's listening anyway. Also with us this evening, he is to Second City Hockey what Justin Pierre is the Motion City soundtrack, and you can find him on Twitter at @Mil182. It is Mil Savage.
Knights on Ice sounds like a nice drink.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's fancy.
I'm trying to think of what's in Knights on Ice. Probably Goldschlager. Because of the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
Well, you got to enjoy, like, it's got to be a drink that helps you enjoy. They're fun to watch, so it's nothing like we're drinking during the season.
It's like a strawberry lemonade with Goldschlager. Like okay. It tastes good with Flexa Gold in it.
Tell you what, report back next week, Shepard. Let us know how
that goes. It's the reverse retro drink.
All right. And you've heard from two of the three other people with us this evening, and the rest of the cast is also here. She is the Second City Hockey Bullen Wall of Text. She is not on Twitter, but you can find all of her stuff at secondcityhockey.com under the username LBR. It is Betsy.
Somebody tried to invite me to a Braves game I think for tonight, it might've been for tomorrow. And they were like, oh, it'll be such a good, like, oh, we'll see each other for the first time in forever. We'll get a good group of friends together. And I immediately was like, do you even know me? Did you like forget who I was during this whole like shutdown thing? I don't do baseball. And I know all of you guys, like at least Dave, you're really into baseball and Mill is. So,
I mean, it's an excuse to go drink outside on a weeknight on what's usually a nice evening. It's just an outdoor bar with a baseball game in the middle of it.
Here's the thing, Betsy, you got to learn the unwritten rules and then you'll enjoy baseball.
Oh God, don't fucking start.
The unwritten rules that you can't take a 47 mile per hour pitch yard.
That would have been like that would have been me throwing a pitch.
His nickname is La Tortuga for a reason. He cannot pitch.
He's a position player.
Do you guys know like breweries or like places where you can go and drink in the afternoon anyway without needing the excuse of watching a boring sport?
Well, I mean, yeah, I like those places too, but like having there's no such thing as a bad option for a place to go drink outside in the summer.
You know how you like look like when you're watching a game, you're like thinking analytics as well for hockey, like you know stuff.
Yeah.
Baseball gets to that point at a certain point and you're just a total nerd. And it's like, I'm sure the three of us have all been off a cliff with it for a while.
Dad was like,
I am not, I understand the analytics exist in baseball, but I also know that they've gone so far ahead of me and I don't know if I'll ever catch up that I've kind of just given up on being able to understand a lot of the deep stats. So, I understand like the most of the basic concepts of it, but
you know the unwritten rules.
Oh, you fuck the unwritten rule.
Hey, but you played, right? A little bit?
Like Little League? Age of 12.
Well, even if you played for 4 or 5 years, there's like a connection to the game if you're into it.
It was like, that was like the childhood sport. We did play that a lot in our neighborhood, but once the pitcher started moving, I decided I was done.
Guys that I played against are in the pros now, and like they all crushed me, but they were still fun to play with.
Zach Plesac?
Plesac's one of them, and then I think I played with some of those Andrean kids against them in travel.
Oh, there was that Andrean. There was a pitcher.
Manaya is one of them.
Broken up by a guy who went to the same high school as him.
Yeah, I got to look into like because it's so long ago, but Zach was awesome even at like 10.
And there was also a kid who grew up across the street from me that was about 10 years younger than me that was a first round draft pick of the Dodgers last year. So what we're saying is I'm not the coolest kid on the block. By a mile.
Wouldn't be me.
But anyway, you guys want to talk about some Blackhawks hockey?
Sure.
Yes.
don't all jump at once.
Certainly.
So we're here. Season's over. But, you know, there's other hockey going on. So we figured while we had some time, we wanted to kind of reflect a little bit on everything that's happened with the Blackhawks for the last 4 to 5 months. Going to do a two-part series. We're going to start with the forwards tonight. And then next week's episode, we're going to dive into the defensemen and the goalies to kind of break it up and just kind of do a little season recap and focus on kind of the present, not as much of the future, but more the present and past, and kind of just share what we learned about some of the guys on the team this season. Now, with the Blackhawks forwards, there are there's a few guys here that there's really not much intrigue about. I mean, Patrick Kane is still Patrick Kane. I don't think there's really anything not too much to add there. Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Toews was we just hope he comes back healthy next season. That's about all I got for him.
Yep.
And then the place where I wanted to start is Kirby Dach. Now I haven't had a chance to do all this research yet, so I'm kind of flying blind. Hopefully this is going to be put together for an article you might see at secondcityhockey.com later this week. But Kirby Dach had the storyline everybody knows at this point. Broke his wrist back in December playing in the pre-tournament World Juniors game. Whether or not you thought he should be there, it's another debate, and I'm already sick of it, so let's not get down that road. But he came back, he did play 18 games, and he did not quite look as good as he did at the end of his rookie season. And then we found out he had like scar tissue developed in his wrist, so they sat him out the last 3 or 4 games. So I can't sit here and tell you that I'm underwhelmed by anything that Kirby Dach did, because it sounded like he was playing hurt the whole season, even in the limited schedule that he had. But I don't know what the right word is for it, but I'm uncomfortable with the fact that the guy that was a number three pick for the Hawks 2 years ago essentially lost basically an entire season. That's not sitting well with me. And so I just throw that statement out to the panel and see what everyone thinks about that.
There were people before the season, like Ryan Lambert of EP Ringside, who said, like, don't put too much emphasis on anything that happens in this weird season.
Fair. That's fair.
I think that's especially the case with Kirby Doc. Especially, again, he had a wrist injury. He probably had a wrist injury and played through pain, judging by the fact that, again, he was pulled for the last four games.
Well, and he said, at some point he said, like, it was still bothering him and it was still hurting. Like, I don't think it was, like, I don't want to say like he shouldn't have been out there, because it sounds like it was just the pain he has to deal with as it finishes healing. But
yeah,
he wasn't himself, clearly.
Right. And they didn't play him a ton with the full line of DeBrincat and Kane that like they should have. They'll probably play him full season next year with. Just, he's a player that like, just don't take anything that happened this season too seriously, and just put a lot of emphasis on what happens next season and just hope that he gets a full recovery this off season.
Yeah. And I'll use an example of, I'm going to probably butcher his name, but Couturier from the Flyers.
Oh, Sean Couturier.
Yeah. I'm really bad with French names. I'm like, I can spell it very well, but I can't pronounce it. So he's a pretty good example, because he actually got injured in his second year too. And it took him like five seasons before he was really racking up his points pretty well. And they continued to play him between the second and third line. And then he just broke out in his like seventh season. That's when he went like almost a point per game and stuff like that. And I don't know if Doc's going to take that long or whatever, but there were people in the Flyers fandom that wanted Couturier to be like launched into the sun, that they thought he was a wasted draft pick and all this other stuff. And he was like the eighth overall pick, you know, so he doesn't have even quite as much like weight on him for being a top three pick. But I think you just have to like realize that we saw a small sliver of what maybe he could be against Vegas. And he did like, I thought he was maybe the best forward against Vegas. And then you just have to like, be patient, because if we're in a situation that was like the Flyers and they got rid of Couturier before he became who he is, wouldn't you be so sad? Like, wouldn't it be just like, it would be like a kick in the pants? So that's what I'm always like, that's the example that you come back to over and over again. And don't give up on a player, or don't put too much emphasis, like Shepard saying, on an injury season.
I guess my concern with, And I like your point about Couturier, because I like the guy I've always been coming back to is Nathan MacKinnon, because he had a weird start and then now he's become this thing that terrifies me, that the Hawks are going to have to face him six or seven times next season. But Couturier is more of a two-way forward. Like, he won a Selkie, and I don't think Kirby Doc necessarily projects as that. So that's why, if I'm going to play devil's advocate here, that's why the wrist injury in general just kind of scares me. I know he's young and young bones heal better and all that, but for a guy that's offense is supposed to be his calling card, doesn't the fact that he had a big wrist injury, does that worry you at all?
I don't know. Kane was better arguably after his wrist surgery.
Yeah, and Couturier does put up a lot of offensive points. And to be fair, Doc played penalty kill throughout all of last postseason. And I think he played some penalty kill during this season, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think Couturier was put in a third-line role. Pre-draft, he was considered a high offense with good defensive responsibilities. His draft scouting report probably isn't that dissimilar from Doc's, if you want to know the truth, because he was always considered strong defensively, just something he could continue to round out. And then he's been used in defensive situations now in the NHL. I don't know if at the exact same age he's the same way, because again, Couturier was used in a almost checking line role for the first little while. So I don't know if I'm not saying he'll project as good as that. I'm just saying that if you get, like, if we give up on or have doubts in a player that's very young who went through an injury, we should just, like, maybe hold on that. Their legitimate concerns, just maybe don't let them, like, linger in your brain for too long.
I think the way I'm at, just kind of just an eyebrow raise, then I think what Doc should do is just have a breakout season next season, and then we don't have to worry about it anymore. That'll make everything great for all of us. Mill, any thoughts to add on Kirby Doc?
Yeah, sure. So, like, obviously a wrist injury is not, like, it's not something you want to happen to a forward who one of his best assets is his hands. It's not that it can't heal. He's young, but I think he was playing through pain, like Shepard said, and that probably hindered him a little bit, because going before the injury, if you look back, he's good. You know, his forehand's good, his backhand's good. He could play short side. He's really good in the slot and between the dots and making passes and taking shots close in. But when you don't have that wrist, it's like all that awareness isn't going to help you, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and also too, I actually don't really think that he needs to play with Kane, because Doc is a playmaker and he's might not touch the puck very much playing with Kane.
Yeah. I guess the comp for Doc was always Ryan Getzlaff, which I hate because I don't particularly care for Ryan Getzlaff, but skill set of more of playmaker than scorer. So yeah.
That's because he's big and he shoots right-handed,
yeah,
though.
Better hairline hopefully for Doc's sake, at least. But the idea of having two playmakers on the same line, like, it's not ideal, I guess. Like, you can put Kane in DeBrincat.
It's not horrible either when the other guy is DeBrincat, though.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, having two playmakers and the snipers, but that's when you get back into the debate from, like, the peak of the Taves Kane years, where do you put Taves and Kane on the same line or do you break them up to make it so a team has to guard two lines?
Yeah. I was about to say, I don't think so. Whenever you look at, like, roster constructions, two playmakers technically can play together pretty well. And Kane's often will shoot more if he's on a line with a playmaker. He shot more when Strome was on his line, for example, than when some other, like, pretty much anybody else was on his line, like, last year, except for Doc. So Kane can technically balance that out, and he's fine, you know? But the situation you get into then is, well, you want to split up your playmaker so you don't have them all loaded up on one line. The Blackhawks just don't have a lot of playmakers. They literally only have, like, three. And it's Kane, Strome, and Doc. And DeBrincat got way better. I think he could end up being a playmaker, but he's not quite at that level yet. And Kubalik took steps forward and stuff like that. But the only reason you wouldn't play them together to me is because you need more playmakers in other lines. Less about two playmakers being together.
I think that's fair, because too, the other thing with Kane and DeBrincat on the ice, this is where the Hawks offense really kind of didn't let Doc showcase his skill set, is they're so one and done and they play on the rush. But if Doc can kind of get, you know, in front of the net a little bit, he wins a lot of those puck scrambles and he's able to put the puck in the back of the net, either off a rebound or deflect a pass. He's quick with his stick, but, you know, they don't do that because they're on the rush all the time.
Yeah, they don't cycle.
So if they could set up, I think that would benefit Kirby Doc a little bit. Also, give him a full year with a consistent line.
Yeah, that's something that the Blackhawks haven't done a lot with, especially with their young forwards, is consistent lines. The Blender's kind of been active full time this season.
Yeah, that's that's another thing we can get to down the road when we have the airing of grievances episode. That's, I'm sure it's lurking. If in case Shepard didn't finish unloading the chamber in the article, you may have seen it at secondcityhockey.com today.
And I want to throw this out too, because I'm not going to make it about the coach, but if you go back to, like, the earlier years for, like, Taves and Kane, they really did play with consistent lines throughout the year. And when they got blended up, it was usually as some kind of in-game adjustment or in the playoffs. But, you know, those young guys do need those reps. So, yeah. I'd like to see that.
Yeah. But we got plenty of other players to get to, so I want to move down the roster a little bit more to a name that I heard Betsy say, and that's Dylan Strome. Because of all the players who are under contract for next season, I think his future seems the murkiest, just by virtue of him getting scratched a few times down the end of the season. And then he also, in his exit interviews, as we talked about last week, he said he was pissed off about that, which he has every right to be. But I also imagine there might be somebody in the Blackhawks front office that didn't appreciate the fact that he said that out loud. So I don't know. I do not have a feeling. I don't feel like Dylan Strome's on this team next season. I don't know where you guys sit on that, but I know he's under contract, but I feel like he's going to get traded at some point. Where do you guys sit on this?
I mean, what are you going to trade him for? Like, unless Joe Sakic's able to send you some garbage back and make him into a great center.
If the Hawks trade anyone to Colorado again, I'm terrified of what the return is.
That's what I'm saying is, like, unless it's something like that. I mean, I like Dylan Strome. I think there's still place for him. But, like, I just don't know what they could trade for him right now.
His value has never been lower. That is fair.
Butlicker, his value has never been lower.
God. Shepard, Betsy, do you have any other thoughts on Stromer?
I like Dylan Strome's play. He's a good both ways center. He's a decent wing. It seems like they didn't find his fit here. His skating didn't improve as much as like the Brinkhat's skating, which was the big concern when he was drafted. The Brinkhat's skating is not a concern anymore. Strome's skating still seems to be a little bit on the slow side. There's been talk of like the Blackhawks exposing him to the expansion draft. Don't get rid of him for free. Get an asset back.
Yeah.
But besides that, like this organization's going to try out Borgstrom. They're going to try out a ton of players over Strome next season.
I talked about this before. I still just don't like the whole, they flip first round picks so easily, former first round picks so easy. And we bring them in and then spit them back out, and none of them stick. I brought up Zadorov last time and Mata and KK. I didn't even get into Panic was there, you know, like
right.
Panic, however you say his freaking name. Panic at the ice rink. And none of them stick. And Strome is one of the best ones that they pulled in. And I feel like he's going to go to another team and be put in a good situation and it's going to work. I don't know if that situation is with the Hawks going forward. I just know that for a team that doesn't have good passing, and Strome was technically the most efficient with high danger passes on the team. He beat out even Kane. Come on, like, you should keep those types of players. Like, mm-hmm. You should try to find out where they can work better. And I again, like I said in the last podcast, I thought the situation was terrible for him because he's not a 1 or 2C, and Taves and Doc being out forced him to try to do something he wasn't. And he didn't step up to it, which I don't think anybody should have expected him to. So I think he's going to be a very good 3C on like an offensive center on a 3C, third line, or he could even be a 2C depending on how good a 1C, 3C is on a team. I hate that they're probably going to give him up for not a whole lot. And then they're going to bring in Borgstrom, who is in the similar situation that Strome was in. He is uber talented, has good hands, has issues with skating, couldn't click even in the AHL. And, you know, it's like you're just starting over again. It's Strome 2.0.
And I don't want to make it sound like I want him to be traded, because I there's offensive talent there and it's looked good at times. And I'm always reluctant to get rid of players that have that, because offensive talent is something that is not as widespread in the league as you might think. Like, people who can legitimately make scoring chances out of nothing, like Strome sometimes can, and the way he sees the game and some of the passes he makes it's a skill set that is not prevalent. So I would want to be damn sure that he's not going to be anything before you trade him away. I think he, like, not exactly the same boat as Doc, but I feel like if you bring him back next season and like tell him like make or break season, either you're good this season or we're trading your ass at the deadline.
Yeah.
Or beforehand. And that's I'd be happy with that. Cause
Sometimes
when guys are in contract years and know they're due for a big raise, sometimes that brings out the best in them.
I just don't want it to be a situation where it's like the reason Vegas was so good so quickly is that there were a lot of underrated players that Vegas was like, these are good players. We're going to take them and put them in a good situation. And they worked. Florida's kind of the same way. What's his name? Starts with a V. Carter.
Verhage.
Verhage.
He's 25, and it took him until that age to like really get there. And his skill was always obvious. It just never, it wasn't clicking for some reason. And I think Strom shows a similar, I don't think he's as good a skater, but I think he's got better hands. So it feels like a waste of an asset and kind of kicking the situation down a little bit more. Like they're going to restart over with a brand new Strom.
Yeah. The Strom situation reminds me a lot of Sam Bennett, who got a restart in Florida and is now their 2C. Yes. Yeah. Like, and he was knocked all the way down to like the Calgary Flames, like fourth line.
Yeah. We talk about Bowman loves reclamation projects, and I don't think we give enough time to any of them sometimes, you know, like occasionally. I don't know if any of them really needed it, but I think Strom deserves another year where he's not being shoehorned into something that's not good for him. And mostly though, I don't want them to give him up for nothing or very little. That is bad asset management to go from Schmaltz, who is a good player, all the way down. And then Perlini obviously turned into something that could be good, but again, it's still a big ass question mark. So I don't know. The trade tree is starting to get very murky.
All right. David Camp's going to play 25 minutes a night on the top six next year.
Just fucking don't.
I'm not lying.
If he's not on the team next year, I'm okay with that.
That's what I'm worried about.
That's the problem. It's like they don't want to. Dylan Strom is like you guys just pointed out clearly, like the best way you could say it. Nobody should expect him to be what he's not just because there's no Taves or Doc.
Yeah. And maybe getting Taves and Doc back is what, you know, I think one of you guys said, you get the other guys back, you properly slot Dylan Strom and good shit happens.
Yeah, but it's just like, just because that's the scenario doesn't mean they could say, oh, well, Camp, we'll just put, he's responsible. He could do that job. It's like, no, he can't. Like, it is what it is.
It's like, it's lack of self-scouting. You have to know, not only do you need to know what the players you are acquiring are capable of doing, you really need to know what the guys you have on your roster are capable of doing. You
would think a professional organization would know that.
Well, this might end up being a two-parter because we've only talked about three or four guys and we've already taken up a good chunk of time, but we're going to take a quick timeout here and we're going to come back on the other side of this timeout. We're going to talk about some more forwards. I don't know who they are and in what order they're going to be, and I feel like we have 96 more guys to get through, but come back on the other side of this break and see how many of them we get through.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. And as promised before the break, we wanted to dive into a few more of the forwards that are on the roster that, that played on the Hawks last season, because there were a lot of them. And let's start with Brandon Hagel, because I think that this is another guy that's kind of interesting. First off, incredible season, came out of nowhere, did everything right. And, you know, kudos to him for working his ass off and getting into the NHL and having all the success he did. I think the issue with him for me is that I was just kind of what we were talking about with Camp and Strom about knowing what his limitations are. Like with Brandon Hagel, I feel like on a good team, he tops out as a third liner and is probably a fourth liner. So I feel like this talk of like maybe you throw him for a game or two in the top six just to wake somebody up, but I feel like he's a bottom six career guy. Am I mistaken on this?
He feels a lot like Paul Byron. Just like an analytic darling who, when he figured out how to score, was really good. Probably a fourth line player, but like a really good one that probably plays like probably closer to 12 minutes than like 10.
Yeah, but 12, I mean, 12 very important minutes. Like I know I tweeted this at some point during the season. Like I feel like a line with, I don't care who the center is, but put Hagel and Hinostroza on the outside and let them just forecheck the shit out of whoever they're playing. and they'll force some turnovers.
Right, and I think Cagle can play some pretty critical penalty kill minutes too.
Yeah, and he, and another guy like DeBrinket and Doc, where the scoring threat would scare the shit out of some defensemen that were running the point.
And Hagel's speed is just gives him that level that you need in this league to be able to do that. So I'm with you. I think the speed actually maybe makes people think that he is more of a, like some people are thinking top six, but you know, he's hustled. He's good enough, but he's so fast. He's useful.
I don't think he quite has like the scoring touch for top six. I think that's where
that's I'm with you. No,
I remember making like a joke on, I think on Twitter somewhere about like, you know, if he had hands, he'd score like 30 goals a year. And his hands aren't terrible, but they're not like top flight.
Right.
Betsy, anything else to add?
Well, I think he's probably going to be a very good third liner. I think he could be second liner, depending on the other people on the line. Mm-hmm. But I still think he's closer to an Andrew Shaw before he went to Montreal. Because Andrew Shaw, like...
So really good Andrew Shaw?
Yeah. I just... So if he could, I always keep saying, you're right, his hands, if he could figure out what Marchand learned to do in close a little bit more, he doesn't have to be at that elite level, but if he could just do it at like 50% as good, that whatever backhand technique that he has that's so good in close, I think Hagel would do much better because he does a lot of dirty work in front of the net and he just shoots directly into a goalie a lot of the time. Most of his goals actually came from slightly farther out where he could actually take time to shoot for a second. Mm-hmm. A lot of those overtime ones were like farther out. If he could figure out how to do it in close, he could have a lot more goals. But he was around what, 4.6 points per game, 0.46, excuse me, points per game. I don't think it's that unrealistic that he could get up to 5, which is like the bottom tier for a second line. So it just really depends on what line he's in. If he could click, ideally you still put him on a third, but he again could be like Shaw, slots down to a fourth line. That's like killer, you know, Kruger. Yeah. And Shaw during 2015, they played like 13 minutes a game and were ridiculous.
With the Jardins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were crazy good. And there's no shame in playing on that type of fourth line to me. So he's more of like a Swiss Army knife type of player. He's good. That can be complementary to a lot of different types of players.
I think the idea when I talk about him being like a third or fourth liner on a good team is it's not like a slight to Hagel, but it's mm-hmm. like it's a team that is good enough to compete, has the forward depth that Hagel's down on the third or fourth line. I think that's the idea. Yeah. That's what I'd like to see the Hawks get to, ideally.
And he is one of those guys where if they shuffle the lines to have him drive possession, they could put him up with like a Taves and a Kubalik just to try to tilt the ice, but that wouldn't be like a long-term thing.
Right, right. So a few other guys, we'll start to go a little more rapid fire as we work our way down the line before there's not as much to say. Dominic Kubalik, I mean, not a one-year wonder, which is good. And I don't know what else to say about him. He's good.
I'd like to see him score more goals and shoot more probably going into next season. Probably get put back with Taves. Hopefully Taves is healthy. Besides that, like he's still.
I wouldn't. Yeah. Taves and Kubalik as a two thirds of a line for early next season, for sure. Again, fingers crossed that Taves is back.
Yeah. And Kubalik's still really good at driving play.
Yeah. And I think anytime that you're above 80% of your individual point percentage, you know, you factoring into a point or a goal on the ice, and he's above that at 5-on-5, and he's above that on the power play. So I think anytime that happens, it means that you are often the one contributing to offense, and Kubalik showed that he could do that even without Taves, and he'll be better hopefully when he's put with him again.
In a similar vein as Dominic Kubalik, because he was Dominic Kubalik, but a year later, Pugh Suter.
I hope he gets some Calder attention.
In other years, maybe. I just think the class is pretty strong this year. Feel like he's not going to have much of a chance. I mean, it's Kaprizov's to lose, right?
Oh yeah, I'm in like third or fourth or fifth.
Okay, well, yeah, he might get some votes, but I don't think.
I don't think he's going to get. I think he should maybe, but I think there were a couple. I don't think he just didn't get as much attention.
And
even when he was, the top scorer for the rookies for a little while to start. He wasn't really getting the love.
Yeah. Yeah. Because probably because his team wasn't all that good. And he's also, you know, doesn't get the attention when you're on a team with Kane and DeBrincat.
Yeah. I was going to say that a lot of people were like, oh, he's just feeding off Kane. And it's not like Panarin, who was like obviously feeding off Kane too, but also just a spark himself.
Right. So. Right. Suter's like, he's kind of that tweener where he can play with elite talent, but he's not really going to drive a line by himself, but he also isn't going to slow elite talent down.
I still maintain, I think he would be better on the wing. I think he's good at center, but he really broke out in the other leagues when he moved to wing. And I'd love to see that next year just to see if that's a possibility, because I think he's got even more offense in him.
There you go. Let's see who else we got here. Ooh, Phil Kuryshev.
I think me and LBR's thoughts are sort of just mind melded at this point. Really good, really good, really good. Give him more time, for the love of God.
Yeah, I will add myself to that list, Mill.
Yeah, what the hell, dude? Like, we bitched about that all year, and like, the guy was good. Like, he's not like, you know, a superstar, but we like him. We like, you know, he's a good player.
We like the player. I think what I want him to become is like that, like my ideal for him would be like Christopher Stieg, like that mid-tier scoring, like not going to be your top line guy like Kane or Taves or whatever, but that second, third line guy that can give you good power play minutes and can produce like 40 or 50 points a year, something like that. Because I feel like that was like Versteeg was that crucial secondary scoring that you sometimes needed deeper in the season back in the early teens. And I feel like that's what Phil Kuryshev can be.
Yeah, and he has the hands for that. He can get on his horse and, you know, he'll give you those. You get 15 out of him. That's you know, 15, 20. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And Kuryshev was by far the best second opportunity player on the Blackhawks. Like, he had more shots off the rebound than anyone else by a pretty distant margin, according to Corey's tracking data. So, yeah, put him with somebody who can actually put a good rebound, like can do that type of trajectory, like stuff. I think he'll score a lot more too.
That sounds like just that's good hockey instincts. He knows because he knows where to be.
And he wears Versteeg's second number, so holler.
There we go. And we've come full circle. Perfect. We already touched on David Kampf a little bit. I believe he's under contract. He's not under contract. He's a free agent.
Yep. Or David Kampf.
Yeah, like he's, again, he can be a very good contributor as a fourth line center. He's good in that role, but just let him do it.
And his initials and his number are like Donkey Kong 64, and we wasted that opportunity.
Well, we can start. Never too late to start, Mill. We can refer to him as Donkey Kong 64 for as long as he's on the Hawks, which could be 2 more months or could be like 3 more years. Who knows?
Yeah, I would. Mm-hmm. I would still want him to be on the Hawks next year if JC wasn't the coach.
But if it was somebody who'd play him 10 minutes instead of 14.
Or they can even play him more than that, but like in a Kruger role where he's like, his main job is to flip the ice and get Kane on there. Cause that's what Kruger did. Kruger, the most common line shift between 2013 and 2015 was Kruger to Kane. And there's a reason for that.
I love that is a stat that was researched, but that's you're right. I didn't know that someone looked that up, but that was a
stat. I looked that up.
Okay. Well, that's very good. That's very good information to have, because I would have never even considered that, but that's a very good, that's a great stat.
It was a stat that like in 2016, somebody asked about something, and then Corsica used to track OZ to DZ, like finish like the transition from one to the other or backwards. And so it was pretty easy to do that. And then shiftchart.com came out right around then too. So it was actually not that difficult to track, but yes, that was the point of Kruger. And I think Kampf could do that too. And he's just not being used that way.
Kampf's going to Florida and he's going to slay on the fourth line.
Yeah, that's
it. Hey, we like charts though.
I mean, Q used Kampf that way.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
While we're on the topic of Florida, let's talk about Vinny Hinostroza real quick. I'm down for he's an unrestricted free agent, but I'm down for like a 1 year, 1 million, maybe 1.5 contract.
Yeah, show me contract.
Huh?
A show me contract.
Yeah. A 1 year, like if you can do that again, maybe we'll talk 2 or 3 years and maybe a little bit more cash. But the player that he was the final month of the season after he returned to Chicago was like maybe not the idealized version, but pretty damn close to it of what he can be. So I'm in the category of certainly worth another look, because when they acquired him, I rolled my eyes, and then after a month, like, all right, maybe they have something here.
Yeah, he was an ass kicker when he came back.
Yeah, I would like him to be the first free agent Bowman negotiated with, but that's not the case right now.
I'm okay with them waiting until after the expansion draft and having like a handshake deal in place.
Yeah, if they have a handshake deal in place now, it'd be good. But like, I don't know if that's the case.
I don't either. And I know that they said that they're still waiting on stuff, but I feel like, yeah, you can't just, you got to hope that that could be repeatable. You know, he had chemistry with like three or four different players and clicked very well. So that doesn't come around often. So maybe see if it works again.
And he can move. So yeah.
Give me a fourth line of Kruger, Kampf, Hinnestroza, and Hagel to start next season.
And they're going to be burning Kampf though.
It's more of a defensive forecheck thing. Well, maybe you get a better center and give him a little bit more of an offensive look. But that was my thought. That start with that fourth line and go for everywhere else. Speaking of fourth lines, Ryan Carpenter. He's under contract next season for $1 million. I assume he's going to be back. He's fine. I don't hate him.
He's there.
He can be used in the Kampf role, and he has better hands. He's not as good as Kampf defensively, but he's, you know, he can play center.
He's a decent penalty killer.
Yeah, he's good on the penalty kill. Yeah. Another guy he is what he is. He's a fourth liner and he's a decent one. And I feel like he's a guy that he's under contract through next season. And after that, he's an unrestricted free agent. And I feel like he probably gets replaced by somebody who's 22 or 23.
Right. He wears 22.
No, but yeah.
I wish there was a way I could ban you for the
box. This isn't ESPN. You can't mute me.
Yeah, Mac Entwistle's coming for his job.
There you go. Yeah, that's
sure. That's okay.
I'll take it. Yeah, that's what you want. You want young players to displace the aging veterans who are on expiring contracts. One guy, another name here that I find interesting because of his story is Adam Gaudette. Didn't really do a ton in his month with the team, but that story about he had some sort of stomach digestive issues or something that he could never keep weight on during the season. And somehow he figured it out and it's not a problem anymore. And he flashed a few times. That like that alone is enough where I'm like, maybe.
It was like intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah. Another eyebrow raised, like maybe they got something. And if they don't, you bring him back on a cheap deal. And if not, you bury him in Rockford or trade him or whatever.
I guess.
What'd you say?
I said, I guess. I guess there's a possibility that that is the reason he has never been good, but.
Yeah, because I remember him in college. While he was in college, the knock on Dylan Sakura was that Sakura was just riding the coattails of Adam Gaudette, and that's why Sakura was everything he was. So then.
Yeah, the way he and Sakura and other guys blitted up in college and then did not do anything in the NHL. Really hope that you don't think that's not the case with Landon Slaggart.
Yeah. I get that. And Barrett. I hope Barrett's
I still have high hopes for Evan Barrett. I don't have any like justification or reason for it, but I just somewhere along the line, someone threw in like a Dave Bolin comp and I'm like, all right, that's my guy. So I have no inside knowledge or information related to that. There you go. Evan Barrett for the Selkie. And he's not even in the NHL yet. We've covered a lot. Got through most names. Mike Hardman. I don't know.
Yeah, 86 off that guy's back.
Yeah, how dare he? How dare
like, come
he?
On. Tavo's about to go on some cup run, bro. Like, come on.
I got nothing on Mike Hardman. I mean,
he's fine.
Yeah,
the sample was too small. He only played in 8 games. He did shoot at like 20%. So even though he scored a little bit, 20% at 5-on-5, even though he scored a little bit.
He scored a bit. He got one goal on 5 shots. Yeah, one goal on 5 shots. So that's efficient.
You know, it's like
one thing you should be efficient.
He got like how many other assists did he get? Did he get like 3?
Two assists.
Yeah, so you got 3 points total, which isn't bad in 8 games for a lower line forward. And he wasn't even played 11 minutes. So that's not
But we're going to get drilled in the comments for not talking about how he had like 7 hits in 6 minutes or whatever.
No, so I will say that his hitting wasn't inefficient. If you noticed, he often disrupted plays and would make the other player cough up the puck in a way that was productive, aka the Hawks sometimes got possession.
Yeah, and that's good, but a lot of times that goes away after a guy makes the team.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, is that going to be a standard? Who knows? It was 8 games.
It's like he was busting his ass because he won, you know, good for him, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I would just let it be stated on the record. Like, none of us are against playing a physical style of hockey, but you need to do it in a way that's productive to being good at hockey.
Yeah, yes. Be consistent.
Skating 3 miles to hit a guy doesn't always do the thing.
Yeah.
Right. Look at how Andrew Shaw played physically versus how Nikita Zadorov is physically.
I figured that's where we were going.
For what it's worth, like, Andrew Shaw physically in the non-highlight reel ones, because some of his memorable ones are pretty ridiculous.
Yes. The perfect example that I always come back to where I'm like, where I'm talking about hit efficiency is the Dave Boland on the player who coughed the puck up to Seabrook's overtime winner against
Nyquist?
Detroit.
Wasn't it Nyquist?
Yeah,
it was right on the, it was on that right wing board, and Dave Boland did that on like 9 playoff goals overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, Boland was so good at it, and sometimes it was just a hard check and it wasn't a full hit, but like, he was so efficient at it. Shaw was really good at it, and neither one of those guys were huge. Like, Dave Boland would be considered kind of big now, but at the time was smaller. You don't have to be big. You don't have to be like huge hits. You just have to be smart.
Knock your guy off the puck.
Exactly. I'm going down the list, and we've got pretty much to everyone that's a forward on this team.
You didn't go over the famous Brett Connolly.
Yeah, I got – I mean, it seems like he's expansion draft fodder for this team. I don't
– Like I said, we're the same age, and he looks like he's 50.
The way they talked about him when they acquired him had me a little bit worried that, like, they think they're going to – tap into something that doesn't exist. I mean, he's 29 years old and he's been in the league for quite a while. So
they gave him Saad's number right away.
that was
weird.
No, you just want to retire everybody's number.
No, I don't want to retire it, but give the guy some respect. Like, he just left. The only number I'm pissed off that's not retired is 28.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope he's the guy that I'm worried that he's going to take ice time away in the future from a younger player that has a higher ceiling, because Connolly just, he's a shrug of the shoulders player, and he's making $3 million a year, which with a team that is $3.5 million, excuse me, a team that's as up against the cap as the Hawks are. You need a guy that's getting $3.5 million, probably needs to do more than he does.
He's Zach Smith 2.0.
Yeah,
I'm with you guys.
Smith wasn't getting 3.5, I don't believe.
Zach Smith was 3.25.
Oh, okay. So he wasn't getting 3.5.
3.25.
There you go.
No, I'm with you guys. Like, don't let those, nothing against him, but don't let him take away time from, again, Phil Kuryshov.
Right.
Which, to be fair, I think he was playing mostly fourth line minutes at the end, so he wasn't really playing over kids.
But that could change.
The only name I think I'm missing here that we haven't talked about yet is, and we actually did mention him briefly, is Mackenzie Entwistle.
And yeah, I liked what I saw from him.
You mentioned it, Betsy, and like the one, he had a game where he pulled away for a breakaway that, and it was kind of like, oh, I didn't know he could do that. And apparently he's been working diligently on his skating.
Yeah, when he got traded, there were a bunch of Arizona people were like, oh, well, his skating's not great. And then I was reading comments of people being like, yeah, but he's been trying. He went to like a specialist, like somebody who just focused on skating like prior to that season and has been doing that constantly for a few years now. And that seems to be his main focus in the off season, which I think is smart because he's got okay hands. I don't think he's got like elite hands, but he's smart. Like, he seems to read the ice very well. And if you can skate pretty well, read the ice well, you can at least be an effective player that could top out far. Because I always assumed he'd be like fourth liner, but maybe he could be a third liner. Maybe he could be a Hagel, like Hagel-esque fourth, like third liner that like does pretty well in that role.
And if he makes it with a team, he allows us to make a lot more references to the Who. So consider me a big fan. But yeah, I'm intrigued. That's another guy that another one of the young guys. I'm very intrigued to see what happens with them next season. And speaking of guys for next season, this guy didn't play this season, but I assume he's going to be back. So we might as well just briefly touch on him. Hey, you guys remember Alex Nylander?
I was going to say, where does he play? Whose lineup spot does he take? Where does he play? I don't see it happening.
I don't either, Shepard, but I just assume that because they traded Yokohari for him, he will be back next season and they will try to find a spot for him.
Yeah, but I mean, Yokohari hasn't become much of anything in Buffalo.
No, I know, but I mean, you still traded a former first round pick for him. So I just assume he's going to get a low, he'll get his restricted free agent tender qualifying offer and he will sign it because I don't think he has leverage to go anywhere else. And they'll bring him to camp and they'll try. And if he sucks, they probably will. I feel like he's not going to have too many chances to prove himself because there's a lot of guys that showed a lot more than Nylander did in his brief playing time. So, and now he's coming off an injury. So who knows how that's affecting him?
Garbage sons always have a job somewhere. You know, it's funny. Like I wrote that Blackhawks bit piece on like a weekday with nothing going on about Nylander skating. And I'm like, nobody's going to read this. And I came back an hour later and there's like 100 heated ass comments on it. I was like, what is going on here?
If nothing else, Second City Hockey loves to be like the white knight to certain players that they feel get piled onto. And I'm like, okay.
Good Lord.
I think he could still be good. He's only 23. He literally just turned 23, like in March.
Yeah, but
so Alex to break it.
23.
He's still so young. If he could just figure out how to put it together, his skating is great. He's got good vision. His hands are really good. He is a playmaker, and they need more of those.
Yeah.
It's just can't put it together in a package consistently so far, but.
Yeah, and I feel like the whole waiting for him to put it together has been kind of the theme of his career. So,
I mean, probably, to be fair, last year was his first real season. I hate to say that. To be fair, let's all say it together. To be fair,
I mean, okay, but then you gotta apply that to like what Adam Gaudette too.
But
Gaudette's had chances.
Yeah, isn't he on like his fourth or fifth season? Like,
is he?
Third?
I thought he didn't play.
And he didn't. And his chances weren't in Buffalo.
Yeah, that's true. Buffalo doesn't count, right? By the way, nice reference.
Vancouver's been pretty bad, but Gaudette played.
He had two 50-plus seasons, and then 33 last year or 33 earlier with Vancouver. So,
like, okay, well, Nikita Zadorov's in year 8, and people tell me he's young, so I don't know.
Like one and a couple halves for Gaudette. So, I think Nylander is in the ultimate like put up or shut up time.
Sure. I can get that, but I think some of that has to do with his draft position. And if we could sometimes just disconnect draft positions from players or contracts from players and see if they're still useful, can they be useful, and kind of just think about them as the player, maybe that would be more helpful. Because I still think he could probably be a good second or third line player. I think the draft position hurts Strom too. People are like, well, he's a bust because he was a former third overall. It's like, but if he can be a really effective third liner, who cares where he was drafted? Sucks for the team that drafted him at 3, but the Blackhawks didn't. So who cares?
There we go. All right. I don't think I'm missing anyone. I think we actually got through everyone. I'm pleasantly surprised. I really thought we were going to be here a while. Talking about other guys into a second edition or something. But I think that's going to wrap up the Blackhawks portion of this podcast, unless there's somebody we missed or anyone has any final thoughts.
We didn't talk about Brandon Peary or Reese Johnson.
Oh my God, I forgot Peary was
gone. I forgot about Brandon Peary.
He existed.
Quenneville.
About Reese Johnson. What exactly is a Reese Johnson?
Never mind.
Anybody.
There are people in the comments that are like, why didn't they give him more time? And I was like, I don't even remember the time that he was here. So what did you see in him?
He drove somebody into the glass. That's why they said that.
He played.
Yeah, he's a less talented Mike Hardman, I think.
Oh, God. That's not nice.
I think he's like, what was that one guy? Man Shitter or whatever that
Brandon
guy.
Brandon Machinter.
Yeah. I think that's like Rhys Johnson's one of them.
Oh,
I don't think he's that big. He's not as, and like Machinter like beat the shit out of some people in some fights, if I remember correctly, either at the NHL or AHL level. I don't think Rhys Johnson's only 6'1", 193. Machinter, I felt, was like huge. But
probably, I don't remember.
Machinter was 6'4", 212. So
guys who can't play and don't get enough time to annoy me, I don't remember.
Yeah.
So Rhys Johnson, I got nothing.
Perfect.
Sorry to all the Rhys Johnson fans out there.
Yeah, our condolences.
Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there we go. So now, as we always do every week, it's food take time. So I believe, Betsy, it's your turn.
Yes. And all right. I don't know if you guys have done this, because mine's a beverage take, which I'm, you know, obviously we can do, but mine is soda take. And
wait, what now?
A soda take?
We don't say that.
What's
here?
Soda?
Technically, okay. So I was trying to. So in the South, we don't say soda either. We say Coke. But
oh yeah,
I didn't want to be like, what do you guys say up there? Pop.
Pop. Like,
oh. Pop. Pop.
I say soda.
P-A-H.
Oh, shut
up. I lived here my entire life, and I say soda.
You're in like the western suburbs of Chicago. How do you?
Me and Dave live like in a black hole.
I was trying to be like, what do they say up there? Okay, so the best Coke of all is Cherry Coke Zero, and all sodas that have cherry flavoring in them are superior to those that don't.
I would take a Cherry Pepsi Max probably over Cherry Coke Zero, but yes.
I do like Cherry Pepsi Max is good too. But like Dr. Pepper has got cherry flavoring and it's mm-hmm. good. I just had Cherry 7 Up the other day. Much better than regular 7-Up. Yeah, you put cherry in something, and apparently I'll like it.
The cherry vanilla Coke Zero is awesome, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but the weird thing is diet sodas with cherry are always superior to just regular diet sodas.
I think it's because the sugar is too high in the other ones. Like, it's, do you have that, like, sticky aftertaste, and you don't have that with the zeros or the diets. But
No. I mean, like, for, like, Cherry Coke Zero. Cherry mm-hmm. Coke versus Cherry Coke Zero. Yeah.
Like, I like Cherry Coke, but Cherry Coke Zero is superior because it doesn't have that sticky-ish aftertaste. It's so, there was an aluminum shortage during the pandemic, so they weren't shipping out certain Coke products.
That's
and
right. I remember
Cherry this. Coke Zero was one of them.
I was pissed.
I was so like, I'm going to die. I don't understand. I'm used to drinking one a day in like a bottle form, and not like a 2-liter, but like a regular little one. And then they started shipping them in the little teeny cans, like the cans that are like half the size of normal.
Yes. I had this exact same problem with just straight up Coke Zero.
Exactly. Yeah. Coke Zero was the other one.
I don't need 8 ounces of this at a time. I need 12.
And they're like more expensive than a 12 pack normal size. They're like $6, $6.30 or something. And I'm like, I can always get 12 packs for like 3 for $5. And I'm like, oh my God.
I was outraged. I was outraged during the pandemic about Coke products.
That was bizarre though. I went to the grocery store, and like the one thing I get is like Coke Zero or Coke Zero with a flavor in the pop aisle, and they're all out of Coke Zero, and I was like, what the hell is going on here? Because you know they overstock regular Coke.
Yeah. I'm gonna go back to the original take though. Like I feel like most cherry flavors in general, like all right, like if you have like cherry pie, that's good. Like if you have actual cherries. But I feel like most cherry flavored things are trash.
But not sodas.
Not Coke. I'm putting your
pop. I just had a cherry popsicle, and it was delicious.
Yeah, I'm with you. Cherry stuff kicks ass for me.
I don't know. Maybe popsicles are the exception. I think cherry pop, but I don't know, anything with like Cherry Jolly Ranchers, like get that shit out of here.
That's like the best one.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Don't
watermelon or go home.
No, cherry.
Oh.
We're like the cherry fans over here. Dave's like, down with cherry.
Yeah, down with
Starburst.
Cherry. Look, name
Skittles. I mean, come on.
Hockey.
I mean, I'm team grape, so.
I'd be more team grape. I mean, If I'm gonna rank my, well, maybe this, we'll do this next week. We'll rank our fruit flavors of things.
But well, I'm the weird guy who likes banana everything, but they don't make it for enough stuff.
Bill, I'm on that. I'm in that club too.
Yeah, it's like there's barely anything, so you got to be selective, like Laffy Taffy or whatever.
Look, the answer banana is milk. Strawberries. Okay, it's strawberry.
Very good.
Strawberry.
No, you should get a bunch of get a Japan. Let me say words here. Japan crate, because they put lots of banana flavored stuff in those. My friend.
Yeah, I know. I like fruit candy more, like, because I can only eat so much chocolate. I get like a stomachache. And but I can eat like sour or sweet like fruit candies like that all the time. It's bad.
I'm still cherry sodas.
Okay. I don't know. We had our Instacart guy came today and he asked my nephew, he was like, how many people live in this house? Cause you get so much soda. And because he's like, he gets us regularly. And it was like, there's three people that live here right now. So it's not that many people. But I was like trying to find a soda that could like take the place of Cherry Coke Zero for a while. It was hard. I was rotating between like root beer and Sunkist and some other ones. Dr. Pepper Zero is delicious, by the way. I don't know if anybody's had it ever. It's even better than Diet, and I like Diet Dr. Pepper. But then today the guy messaged me and was like, oh, hey, so I see the big cans are in stock of Cherry Coke Zero. Do you want them? And I go, I was like, how many are there? And I was like, just what do you buy think all is a crazy amount?
He
bought me six.
I enjoy that you have that good of a relationship with your Instacart person that they are texting you, hey, yo, they got the goods. How much you want?
He's in the chat.
I don't know if any of you guys buy like seltzers, like not like alcoholic ones, but just like bubbly or whatever. But I drink the cherry one a lot when I buy it. So that's like another thing.
I don't like Dr. Pepper at all. I've never gotten Dr. Pepper. I don't get that one.
You haven't lived in Texas.
You are correct, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that all they have in Texas? I've been to Texas. I don't know.
It's way bigger in Texas. I'd say like probably Texas is number one soda.
They say everything's bigger in Texas, Shepard. So.
Damn. Nikita Zadorov must be huge when they play the Stars. You know what? Pepsi Blue just came back though for the first time since 2004. And that's like the first pop of sugar I bought in like years. It was awesome.
Pepsi is not a thing you drink in Georgia.
Pepsi Blue doesn't have a Coke equivalent.
It doesn't matter. If you go to a place and you go, I want a Coke, and then they go, will Pepsi be okay? They'll be like, I'll take a water instead. Sometimes. Like if it's not Pepsi Cherry, no. People are not gonna. That's I don't want it either.
But Pepsi Blue is so good, though.
I don't think I've actually ever had Pepsi Blue.
It's like it has a Coke Pepsi, like the cola aftertaste, but the berry before it, so it doesn't taste like too sweet. I don't know. It's awesome.
I'll see if they have it down here. I'll try it.
I don't know. Just Pepsi Blue just sounds. I've seen it, and I'm just like that looks like just a bet. It looks like just pure sugar.
Well, I mean, it is, but like you gotta enjoy yourself once in a while.
I don't. I'd like something, anything that is that sugary. Like I just can't.
I just can't anymore. They sell it in bottles, so like I drank like half of it.
Can I get like a shot glass? Maybe it's a good mixer. Maybe that's.
Oh no, the sugar. The more sugar, the worse it is.
Okay, well, see, this is why I just drink beer. I don't have to mix stuff. Then it's much more simple. I just crack the can and down the hatch.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah. It's also why I'm out of shape.
Same. Well, I think we've officially gone far enough off the rails that I can bring this all together for a nice train wreck ending. So thank you very much for listening to this episode of Musings on Madison. Stay tuned to secondcityhockey.com. We're doing all our season recap stuff for the next little while. So we'll have more podcasts every week. We'll have more articles coming up, hopefully every day, if not at least every other day. We still got plenty of stuff to write about, plenty of stuff to talk about, and plenty of stuff to analyze going forward, including the expansion draft, however the hell LTIR works, the expansion draft, the actual draft, free agency, yada, yada, yada. So keep coming on back. We'll have plenty of stuff for you to read and hop on down to the comments where there's always something entertaining happening. So thanks again for listening. And for Mill, for Shepard, for Betsy, I'm Dave. And as always, go Hawks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.